Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
I was always overprotective, but now I feel like I don't let anybody come to my house, period, because that was considered my house. And I feel like something like that shouldn't happen in your home, so I'm super overprotective now. Like, I don't let my son go outside by himself, even though, I mean, he's not old enough, but I never let him out of my sight, neither one of them. It's just so hard. Like, I've done polygraphs, I've done volunteer searches, we've done everything. Now we're at a point where, like, what do you do? How do you keep searching? Whoever is behind this, whoever has any kind of knowledge, any whereabouts, any kind of info, whether it be the biggest or smallest, I just pray and I hope and I remain hopeful and faithful that someone will come do the right thing. Because, I mean, Joshua doesn't belong wherever it is he's at, he doesn't belong there. He has a family that loves him and cares about him. And we still celebrate birthdays and every holidays, and he has a closet full of presents. And my kids don't know him, but they talk about him like they met him. Like, it's so unfair. I just want someone to do the right thing. I mean, they can do it anonymously.
You could tell she was in shock, you know, in the pictures and some of the news things. She just kind of had this glaze over her. But a lot of people handle that differently. I was in shock for weeks before I even showed any emotion. And then it was kind of like, you know, pure terror. Because I was like, oh my God, what is really going on here? Would it really hit me? And I thought, okay, nothing's coming up. You know, we're not finding him. The neighbors aren't bringing him back home. They haven't found anything. And then they thought maybe, okay, he got out and maybe like a coyote or something, you know, got him. And they're saying because it was so cold, he didn't have a coat on, he didn't have shoes. If he was in the field somewhere, he would have froze to death and that he would have died.
I think it's important to note that the New Braunfels Police Department feels that this case is very important. I mean, any case is very important, but anytime you have a child go missing in your community, that's important not just to the police department, but to the community as a whole. And we certainly feel for this family and family members who have this child that's missing. I mean, it is a mystery to an extent, right? I mean, we don't know what happened to him. And, you know, we believe very strongly that the people who do know what happened to him are just not coming forward and saying so. And that's why we keep talking about listening to your conscience. And if you want justice for that little boy, or you want this case to be closed for him, you know, so that people can, you know, once and for all know what happened, you need to come forward and tell us. It's time. It's been 9 years. Let's not let it get to 10.
On February 4th, 2011, the Texas Hill Country was experiencing some abnormally cold weather. It had been snowing in New Braunfels, and the temperatures dipped down below 20 degrees. 18-month-old Joshua Davis was staying warm in bed with his mom watching movies. When she realized that he had crawled off, she got up to search for Joshua, and he was nowhere to be found. A search ensued, but Joshua was never seen again. Joshua's family maintains that he must have gotten out of the house or have been taken by someone, but who? The New Braunfels Police Department believes that the answers to this mystery lie within the people who were in the house that day. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 175 of The Vanished, Joshua Davis's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices and audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Joshua Davis was a happy 18-month-old whose favorite movie was Toy Story and enjoyed spending his time playing with his older brother. On February 4th, 2011, there was a big basketball game on TV, and Joshua's parents had some friends over to watch the game. Joshua's mom, Sabrina, was 8 months pregnant at the time, and she wanted to relax and enjoy the time off, so she and Joshua settled into bed to watch movies together. We spoke to Joshua's mom, Sabrina, for this story, and we asked her to tell us a little bit about her son.
As a baby, he was very outgoing, very full of life, always smiling. He was always with me, my right-hand man. He liked to be around me a lot. His favorite movie was Toy Story. He was just so full of life, always happy, always smiling.
Joshua's grandmother, Natalie, wasn't at the home when he disappeared, but she has led the search for her grandson over the last 8 years. We also spoke with her and asked her to share what she knows about what happened on the day Joshua vanished.
Joshua was 18 months old when he went missing. He was living with my daughter, his dad, and they were residing in the mobile home of Joshua's paternal grandfather. The day that Joshua went missing, first of all, he had been in the hospital in San Antonio for asthma, and he was in there for about 2 weeks. He was hospitalized. So when he came home, he was probably home about maybe 2 weeks or a week and a half or so. And it was really cold the day that he went missing, like we had gotten a cold front. The actual day that he went missing, that night it had snowed. And so here in San Antonio, it hardly ever snows. So when it does, it's like really cold. The freeways kind of shut down, you know, everything kind of stops because we're not really equipped for snow. And so it was really cold. My daughter was home, like a lot of businesses had shut down. School didn't report that day because it was, you know, there was snow. It was a big deal. And so my daughter was home with him, and see, she was pregnant. At the time, she was about eight and a half months. It was like in a little mobile park area. Like, it's kind of like wooded, and then there's like a street, and there's just mobile homes all up and down the street. And back of the trailer where they were living, the trailer kind of sits a little bit far from the sidewalk. You know, it's not right at the street level. You kind of have to walk in a little bit. And behind their house, they had like a yard. And then behind the yard, there was kind of like a little open area. And there was a school. You could see the school from in back of their house. But the mobile park where they were living, there wasn't really any street lights. So at night, it was like really dark other than the car lights. You know, there's a lot of times they didn't even have street lights on the street. And so that particular day, my daughter, she texted me and she was like, "What are you doing?" You know, I didn't go to work that day either. So it was probably around 6 o'clock in the evening. I had talked to her and she wanted to know if I would watch the baby because she was pregnant. One of her friends were visiting her and then Joshua's dad was there and they were going to go eat. And I said, "Well, no, I don't want you to bring the baby out because it's cold." The day before she had brought him to my house because she had an appointment with WIC and with her doctor, her OBGYN. So I had watched Joshua the whole day. So she picked him up that evening, the night before, and she went home. And then that day, she didn't go to work either because it was cold. And so I didn't want her to bring him out. I told her, "Why don't you just order pizza, whatever?" Because, you know, number one, it was cold. Number two, if the car were to break down or something, I would be the one that I would have to go and rescue them. And I was like, "I don't want to be outside. It was too cold." That's the last I had heard from her. And then like around maybe 2 hours later, it was a little bit like right before 8 or a little after 8, I got a phone call from her and she was like really upset and crying and stuff. And she said, "Mom, you're going to have to come. You might want to get over here like quick because we can't find the baby and the police are here." And I'm like, "Oh my God, what?" And so I was at home with my youngest daughter and we were watching TV. And so I had, you know, kind of thrown my shoes on. I was like, "Hurry up, let's go. You know, so we get over there. It was probably like about maybe a 7 to 10 minute ride from my house to where the trailer park was. And when I hit the corner of the street to turn into the trailer park, it was like I had to park way at the end of the street because it was filled with cars. There was like neighbors were already out there. There was a lot of commotion. It looked like a football field, you know, that was lit up. The canine unit was already there. The police were already there. There was people walking around and I'm like, "What the hell is going on?" And so I was kind of like, this isn't real, you know, like, wait a minute. I didn't even get the whole story. So it took me a few minutes before I found my daughter because there was a lot of people walking around. And I still didn't even get the whole story, except that, you know, she was laying down. She was pregnant, so she was laying down in the back bedroom where their room was, and she had Toy Story on. And Joshua, at the time, you know, he was 18 months, but he could walk. And he could kind of crawl, you know, and climb a little bit. He still kind of talked baby talk, so you really couldn't understand too much of what he was saying if you weren't around him, you know. And that particular day, they were watching a basketball game. And so because all the doors were closed because it was cold outside and because they're not, the house wasn't like right at the street level, you couldn't really hear anything because it was windy outside. So if there was something going outside and the TV was on kind of loud, you're not going to hear what's on, you know, what's going on outside unless you turn the TV down or like you look out the window or whatever. She was laying down watching TV with Joshua, and in the living room was the dad, the dad's friend, my daughter's friend. His great-grandpa was out there, and they were all watching the game. Now, his grandfather, his paternal grandfather, his girlfriend, and then her newborn grandchild was, like, in the bedroom. And so my daughter, you know, seen the baby walk back and forth, and it had been a few minutes before she had seen him, and she's like, wait a minute, he didn't come back. So she got up to go see where the baby was. When she came out the room, and she was like, where's the baby? And they're like, what are you talking about? I thought the baby was in the room with you. She's like, well, you know, no, he came out here. So she went to look in the other bedroom, and he wasn't in there. And then they started, she's like, are you kidding me? Where's the baby?
Natalie mentions a man who was described as Joshua's father's friend. We will discuss this person in greater detail later on in the show. But to avoid confusion, his name is Aaron. And you will hear Natalie refer to him as the dad's friend or the family friend. When Joshua's mom, Sabrina, realized that he was missing, Natalie says that Sabrina jumped into action, looking everywhere for baby Joshua, but that of all the people that were in the home, only one person had left at any time during that day.
In the meantime, the dad's friend was the only one that had left the house that day. My daughter said that he went out through the back. Now, there's a bathroom down the hallway between the living room where they were. There's a little hallway that leads to the bedroom my daughter was at. There's a bathroom like on that hallway. So I'm not sure why he didn't use that restroom, but somewhere it came out that he went out through the back door to go pee back in the yard. And the steps in the back were like kind of wooden steps. And so there was no lights again. It was dark and it was kind of icy on the stairs. I guess he had gone out and come back through the back door more than one time. And then he went back to the bedroom to say goodbye to my daughter. And then he went back out through the front door. So it was like he went out through the back maybe more than once. And then he came back in. And at one point, he said that the baby followed him out and he kind of took him back in the house. And that would be the back door. So when he went out through the front door, he left. My daughter, you know, nobody thought anything about it. He left. And then a few minutes later is when she came out looking for the baby, and the baby, you know, wasn't there. So did they think, okay, maybe he got out through the back door? So they started looking around. The baby wasn't anywhere. It was probably like between 18 and 24 degrees that day, that evening, and it was already dark.
When Sabrina couldn't find baby Joshua, his grandfather Jerome called 911. You will hear the entire 911 call later in the show. The New Braunfels Police Department responded to a missing child call with all of their resources. Natalie shared what she remembers and what she found strange about Aaron's behavior that day.
Number one, it was dark. And number two, if he would have went on the stairs, he probably would have fell because they were iced over. In doing all this, they were looking around for the baby. They went outside, you know, they looked down underneath the trailer and all that in the yard. They were thinking maybe he, you know, got locked out or something. Nobody could find him. So then they called the police. Once the police came, then my daughter had a chance to call me and she called me. My first thing was, okay, well, who's the last person to leave? And it was the friend. And so I guess the police had, you know, they tried to call the friend, and the friend he said he was going to go home. He hadn't made it to his home yet. The police got to his house, and he used to live in the same city, and he was living with his grandparents. Well, when he got to his house, the grandparents were like, well, he's at work. He had called in sick that day to go to my daughter's house and watch the game. And so the grandparents didn't know anything about it. So the police were like, well, there's a baby missing. He was the last person to leave. We need him to come down. You know, we need to talk to him. I'm not even sure that he was responsible. I think maybe somebody else may have been responsible, or if there was an accident, maybe he's afraid to say what exactly happened unless he was involved. And I don't even know, you know, I can't even think what motive anybody would have for taking him other than my daughter, like, people used to stop her all the time on the street and tell her, you know, that my grandson had, he has really big eyes. And, you know, people would always compliment her and say how cute he was and things like that. And I always thought, well, God, maybe somebody sold him, you know. They've never found nothing, no clothing, no DNA. They had a search party and they met at the school and they searched all the sewer drains. They searched, there's even a, like a lake not too far from where my daughter lives or that house was. That November, I believe, they actually had divers and they swarmed the lake and they didn't find anything. So it's kind of like, you know, where could he be or what could have happened? And we live like off of 35 freeway that goes straight to Mexico. It goes straight, you know, out to Oklahoma. And I was like, if they get to the freeway, they're going to get away. The baby didn't have any shoes or coat on and he wouldn't go outside.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished.
As I mentioned earlier, Joshua's grandmother, Natalie, wasn't in the house when he disappeared, but his mom, Sabrina, was. We asked her to tell us what she remembers from that day.
We woke up early that morning. It was snowing outside. So I went out on the front porch because it was snowing that day, and I made a snowball in my hand, and I brought it into him. And I remember he was afraid of the snow. He ran from it. Shortly after that, me and his father came inside, and my in-laws at the time, his father was making breakfast. It was cold that day, so shortly after, we went in our room and we watched two movies and we fell asleep. We woke up, it was like around 1:05. I fed him pizza, got him dressed. It was a normal day. A family friend came over and he hung out for a while. They were playing quarters and the basketball game was on, so they were watching the game in the front living room. Well, my stepson had came that day, and usually Joshua was in the room with me with the door closed. Since my stepson was there, I allowed him to be, it was my house, but I opened the door and also allowing Joshua to go back and forth from room to room. Everything was normal. We wanted to go somewhere that night, so I asked my mom to watch him, but my mom didn't want to watch him, so we wound up staying home, and around 7:45, the family friend who's left, that's when I realized Joshua hadn't been back there with me. I was watching Toy Story. It was on over and over again. That was his favorite movie. So it was like five minutes had passed, and Joshua, like I said, was always by my side. So I got up off the room and I went to the dining room area, the living room, where everyone else was at. That's where his father was, my stepson, his grandfather, Henry White, Aaron at the time, they were all in there. And then his grandfather, Jerome, and his girlfriend, Vicky, and another baby were in their room. my first thing, my instinct, I jumped up and I asked Josh, which was his dad, if he had seen Joshy, and he told me he was back there with me, and I told him no, I hadn't seen him in about 5 minutes. Well, at this time, the family friend Aaron had left already. I contacted him, his father contacted him, and his grandfather, and he gave us all three different stories. The last time I seen him, he was in my room because I was like leaned up on the bed like this. I was 8.5 months pregnant, and Toy Story was on, and all they did in the living room was watch ESPN, and I don't like sports. So I was in the back room, and I had seen him. It was like 5 minutes, 10 minutes max, because he was going back and forth, back and forth. And my stepson was on the couch, and I knew he was playing with him. So after I realized it had been longer than usual of him coming back there, that's when I jumped up, and I asked everyone in the living room. I called Aaron at the time. Aaron told me that my son he went to use the restroom on the back porch, which there was two restrooms in the trailer. He said that he went to use the restroom on the back porch, and when he went out, my son followed him. So he put him back in the house and locked the door behind him. I'm not sure what story he gave the dad or the grandfather. But right after that, I began looking everywhere. I started looking in places that I knew he wouldn't even be, in the cabinets, underneath, everywhere. Shortly after that, I went out the back porch, and the back porch was icy, and it was freezing cold that day. It was dark, so we all went. We started looking. I remember my father-in-law at the time went out the front door as well. He started looking. He got in his truck, and he went towards Klein Road. He came back, and when he came back, we called the cops. The cops came out. We did a 911 reverse call. We did it seemed like the whole town of New Braunfels was out there. Cadaver dogs. Heidi Search Center came out as well. Honestly, I think the answer lies within there was only one person that left that house that night. I mean, I believe he knows something. Why did he give three contradicting stories? Why didn't he want to take a polygraph test? Why does he not want to cooperate in any way? There was also a neighbor that lived directly across the street named Whitney. She was 15 at the time. Her and her cousin were selling Girl Scout cookies. And she came and she told us that she seen Aaron outside with a dude that we never seen. She was able to describe to me what they were wearing, what kind of beer he was drinking. But she said they were out there for a while and we never seen any of this.
As you heard, Joshua's father's friend, Aaron, was in the home that day. Aaron is a childhood friend of Joshua's father. And Sabrina's family believes that he may hold the answers to what happened to baby Joshua. And while he has spoken to police, he hired an attorney and refused to take a polygraph exam. We wanted to know more about Aaron and how Joshua's dad came to know him. So we asked Sabrina to tell us what she knows about their friendship.
They went to high school together. He went to the same high school as me as well, Canyon High School, but I didn't know him. I didn't talk to him. I knew him through Joshua's father. And I know whenever Aaron did come over, because he liked to go deer hunting and stuff. So he would bring over like deer meat. That's all I ever knew them. Like they drink a couple beers or they talk about hunting. It's not like they ever hung out or they went. It was always just hunting wise. That night it snowed. And I remember Aaron had Joshua's father call in to work for him. But when it snows over here, it's a big thing. People don't really know how to drive. So I forgot what were the words he used. But he called in and said that he couldn't make it into work today because of the snow. So when all this happened, when Aaron went home, I don't know. I mean, when Aaron left our house, I don't think he went straight home because he didn't want his grandmother to know that he had called into work that night.
Sabrina believes that Aaron knows something about what happened to Joshua that day. She shared some of the things that he has done or not done that she believes are telling.
The police were turning down so many people because instead of letting them search, they were making them do a thorough background check, making sure they didn't have warrants out. I remember that dude and that girl Whitney said was outside with Aaron. He was acting strange too, him and his girlfriend. They were crying so bad, like they knew my son so well. It was just, everything was just so blurred to me. And now that I just think about it, I mean, Aaron was always came around. He was willing to come when Joshua's father got arrested. He was willing to help bond him out. I mean, I don't understand why Aaron, I haven't seen him since that day. I don't understand why he didn't show up to volunteer searches. I called him and I pleaded for him to get missing child flyers that way, since he worked at the outlets where people from all over the world go, he could hand them out. I've never seen Aaron since then. I know this couldn't just be one person that did it, but I do believe that Aaron has some kind of knowledge. I do remember times when I would go hand out flyers in front of Aaron's house. Because I remember one time I went to Aaron's house and I knocked on the door and his grandmother answered the door, and she's the one that retained his attorney. And she didn't recognize who I was at the time, and my mom was with me, and it was around my son's birthday. So I went knocking on the door and she answered the door and I asked for Aaron if he was home and she said yes. Well, I guess as she was walking away to go get him, she recognized who I was because I had on a shirt with my son's picture on it. And she came back to the door and she's like, who are you? And I was like, I'm Sabrina. I'm Joshua's mother. And she's like, oh no, he can't come to the door. He's been involved in a very bad car wreck. And I just lost it. I started crying and I'm like, what do you mean he can't come to the door? If it was your grandson, you'd want answers. And I cried. I was like, I just want to talk to him. But her story changed so quickly. So then after that, we took a bunch of flyers with us because they lived in a really nice neighborhood and all the mailboxes were in like the entrance of the houses. And it was me, my mother, my sister, and Joshua's father at the time. And we taped flyers all up and down this road, all over street poles, mailboxes, everywhere. And the next day we went back and to go look and each and every flyer was ripped down. And as we were mailing them or taping them to the mailboxes, his grandmother came in the car and told us that we had to leave or she was going to get us for harassment. And I was like, what are we? I don't understand what we're doing wrong. But I couldn't wrap my mind around how it bothered them so much to have my son's face plastered all over their neighborhood when there was missing dog and missing cat fly. And those were still up. It just didn't make sense to me.
It does seem strange that Aaron and his family would take down flyers for a missing child and choose not to help search for Joshua. Why did he hire an attorney and refuse to consent to a polygraph exam? Does he know more than he shared with the police? We reached out to Aaron to attempt to answer some of these questions, but didn't get a response. Joshua's grandmother, Natalie, mentioned that Aaron acted strangely the night that Joshua disappeared. She told us about some of the things that stood out to her as odd when the investigation began.
My daughter was trying to get in touch with him, and he did answer the phone, and he was like, well, I'm offering my condolences. Maybe it's just that he was at a loss for words. He didn't know what that meant, but that's what he said. And they're like, condolences? What are you talking about, you know? And he said that he didn't see the baby, that he left, and the baby, you know, I thought the baby went back inside. And so it was kind of like, okay, well, did you see anything? Was anybody outside? When he did go to the police station that night, he showed up with a lawyer. And so he's never really took a polygraph test. He's never really, you know, the lawyer may or may not have let him talk, but it's pretty much like he showed up from the very first day with the lawyer. And what the police were telling us was that he's never really been questioned. He gets in trouble a lot. His family has shipped him off to different parts of Texas or even maybe even out of state, because it's like that was the last time they seen him. He never showed up to help with any searches. He never called, never came. You know, it's like he disappeared.
Sabrina has been frustrated with the investigation into Joshua's disappearance by the New Braunfels Police Department. Here's her take on that.
Honestly, I feel like it's a cold case. They tell us that they're chasing every lead they have, but there's been multiple leads that me and my mom went in there and told them about. And basically it was they didn't have the time or the resources to chase after that lead.
Joshua's grandmother, Natalie, has also been frustrated with the law enforcement response to Joshua's disappearance. We asked her to share what has taken place in the search for baby Joshua and if there had been any leads or sightings.
We don't have any tips. All the tips that have been coming in kind of like died, because it's like the police were thinking, we've already heard this story. That's our theory. And they will not say that it's a cold case, but in their eyes, what they say every year on the anniversary date is, if the family cooperates, we can solve the case. So I pretty much feel like they've given up and it's a cold case. They just won't admit that. I don't think that there's any new leads or that, you know, and if they are, they're like few and far between. So it's kind of like, I feel if this is a cold case, then call somebody else in or give it to someone else, because he couldn't have just disappeared. You know, I mean, I'm lost. I don't know what else to do. And it's very likely that he could have been sold. You know, he could have been, somebody could have really just wanted a baby. But in my heart, I don't, maybe God's protecting me, but I don't feel that he's deceased. I just don't feel that. I feel that he's somewhere and somebody has him. There's been people that have said, oh, we've seen Josh, you know, we've seen somebody that looked like Joshua. It was probably like two or three different times. And each time we would report it to the police, it would never be him. And so it's kind of like, is he even in this area? You know, he could be, somebody could have took him out of state. He could be anywhere. He could be, you know, as close as like Austin, which is probably an hour away from us. But because we're not on the same news channel, people down there don't even know who he is. And the police and I used to go in there frequently, and I was sitting down and I would talk to the detective. And I mean, I could go in there at any time and he'd make time for me and we'd talk, but he retired. And when he retired, a new one came on. And it's kind of like they don't have time for me. They would kind of, I would go in there and I would ask them questions like, well, you know, what's new in the case? And they really wouldn't tell me anything. And I feel that it's because they didn't have anything new to tell me. But instead of saying that, they were just like, well, we can't discuss it. We're working on some things. And it's like, well, what are you working on? You know, like, I don't think that they're doing anything. It's sad and it's frustrating and it's a nightmare that we just never wake up from. They don't have any evidence. It's just their theory because they're saying that there was drugs in the house that day. My thing is, if there was drugs in the house, where's the drugs? And if you have evidence of that, why isn't somebody arrested? Why? What are you waiting for? You know, I would prefer if they just, and everybody was questioned. My daughter at the time was pregnant, so they wouldn't let her take a polygraph. Everybody was pointing the finger at my daughter and at the dad.
After we spoke with both Sabrina and Natalie, we wanted to find out what the police have been doing in their search for Joshua. Has the case really gone cold with no leads? We spoke to the New Braunfels Police Department's public information officer, David Ferguson, and this is what he told us.
My name is David Ferguson, and I'm the communications coordinator for the New Braunfels Police Department, which means I handle the day-to-day media inquiries and as well as social media and website work for the police department. On February 4th, 2011, Joshua Davis Jr., who was an 18-month-old child, went missing from his home in the 2600 block of Savannah Hills Circle. That happened to be on one of the coldest nights of that winter. There was some light snow and ice covering the ground. It was initially suggested that the 2-foot-tall, 30-pound toddler had simply wandered outside into the rural area surrounding the home. And, of course, a full-scale search for the boy happened at that point. In the first few hours, days, and weeks, even years of the investigation, our detectives were given a variety of stories and theories from family members and those inside the house about what may have happened to baby Joshua. And so our response was based on, in many cases, their theories and the stories that they were telling us. So initially, you know, we spent a lot of time being told by the family that Joshua was capable of turning door handles and that the toddler had opened a door, gone down a small set of stairs, and wandered off into the 19-degree weather with no shoes on. And so for the first at least day or so, that was the main focus, was trying to find this little boy who had wandered off into a very, very cold night into the early morning hours. So we had dozens of officers, as many as at one point 100 volunteers from the community, along with eventually resources coming in from San Antonio and other surrounding areas, including dogs and horseback searches, that kind of thing. So I can tell you that initially a lot of resources helped in the ground and air search for the missing boy, including DPS helicopters, canine search teams, horseback search teams, dozens and dozens of volunteers from the community, along with help from organizations like the Heidi Search Center. And then on the investigative side of things, both the Texas Rangers and the FBI provided assistance throughout the investigation. After many hours of searching with no sign of Joshua, family members then told investigators that they believed he had still wandered out of the house, but that he must have been abducted by someone, presumably someone who was prowling that rural area of town at 8 o'clock at night in 19-degree weather, hoping to find a child to take. As almost ridiculous as that may sound, we certainly thought, well, you know, we better check into this. And so, you know, we started looking at those kinds of possibilities and trying to find evidence that something like that may have happened. Obviously, there are some potential flaws in that kind of story, and the family noticed that and then turned their attention to a registered sex offender that lived on the same street. And investigators were able to pretty quickly determine that he had no connection with the boy's disappearance. And then the family changed their story a bit and claimed that Joshua was not able to open doors on his own. And so that meant someone must have taken Joshua from inside the house. They did admit that it would be next to impossible for someone to enter the home without being noticed. And so that's when their story changed again, this time focusing on the father's friend who was in the house that night. And then now years later, some members of the family believe that baby Joshua was still somehow abducted that night and has now either been incorporated into someone else's family or is being sold in the child sex trade.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. If Joshua wasn't able to exit the home on his own, does that mean that he was possibly abducted or trafficked and taken to Mexico? This is what the police had to say about that theory.
That kind of thought process is sort of the latest in a lengthy list of potential theories that the family has put forward over the years. And I think we've made it very clear both to the family privately and now very publicly that in all of the evidence that's been gathered, there has been no evidence that suggests that Joshua was abducted. Yes, New Braunfels is, I guess, close enough to the Mexico border to say that that's a possibility. And again, we're not ruling anything out. You know, we are still open to the fact that there's a variety of scenarios that could be the truth out there. So the New Braunfels Police Department has consistently said that the key information needed to solve this case lies with those that were in the home at the time Joshua went missing. Members of the family have been disingenuous with the media and the community and others about the facts of this investigation. And even though the family has been repeatedly shown the facts of the investigation by detectives, there are some members of the family that just have refused to believe those facts and have continued to propagate misinformation about the case to the media and to the community and others.
Natalie mentioned that she doesn't believe that the police have any evidence in Joshua's disappearance. When we spoke with them, they wouldn't share with us if they have any physical evidence that points to a particular outcome. But they did tell us about the timeline of events they've put together in Joshua's case.
We're not going to talk about specific evidence, and I don't want to get into details about what drugs may or may not have been present inside the home during his disappearance. But what we can tell you is that the family lied about the very existence of those drugs and drug use, and they lied about it for more than a year into the investigation before they admitted that that was the case. You know, we've had 8 years to, you know, continue collecting evidence, taking statements, talking to witnesses, talking to family members, talking to friends of friends of friends. You know, like, we've had a long time to put information together. And at this point, those are the things that we're willing to say, that based on those statements that have been given to us throughout the investigation, we believe that anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour passed between the time that Joshua disappeared and the call to 911 was made. And that during that time, not only were the illegal drugs cleaned up and disposed of, but that a family meeting was held prior to 911 being called. And although the hope is always to find baby Josh alive, unfortunately, our investigation points towards a different theory indicating that the child is most likely deceased. Clear, as far as what exactly happened to baby Josh, our investigators are not ruling out anything. However, to date, in all of the evidence that's been gathered, there has been no evidence that suggests that Joshua was abducted and or abducted for the purposes of sex trafficking. Based on the statements that were given to detectives throughout the course of this investigation, it's believed that approximately 45 minutes to an hour passed from the time that Joshua disappeared and the call to 911 was made. And during that time, investigators know now that illegal drugs were cleaned up and disposed of, and that a family meeting was held prior to the 911 call being made. And although they have been cooperative with the investigation, those that were in the house that night have not been forthcoming with fully truthful information in all aspects of this case. So although we have not formally named a suspect, anyone that was inside the house that night is considered a person of interest in his disappearance. At least one of the adults that were in the home, and our investigation leads us to believe that it's likely that two or more people that were inside the house know what happened to baby Josh that night.
You've heard Joshua's mom, Sabrina, and grandmother, Natalie, share their suspicions that a family friend, Aaron, may have had something to do with Joshua's disappearance. When we spoke with the police, we asked if they had talked to Aaron and if they consider him a person of interest in Joshua's disappearance.
That friend has been cooperative with investigators both before and after he acquired a lawyer, and he's spoken with investigators a number of times as part of this investigation. I would say that no one is quote-unquote ruled out in this case because Joshua remains missing. However, based on statements made by Joshua's father and others inside the house that night, Aaron was unequivocally not in the house at the time when baby Joshua went missing. What I would say is that he has been cooperative with investigators both before and after he acquired a lawyer, and he has spoken with our investigators a number of times as part of this investigation. The family has made a big deal out of the fact that he lawyered up and that that means something, and that we're trying to make it clear that even after he acquired the lawyer, he still was cooperative and he still came in and spoke with investigators. And so just the fact that he has a lawyer doesn't mean necessarily anything. When someone acquires a lawyer, that's their right in the United States. And again, based on statements made by those that were in the house that night, we have ruled out that Aaron in particular abducted the child. And that despite the fact that those things that I just said about Aaron, despite that those things have been shown and those facts have been given several times to members of the family, some members of the family continue to implicate Aaron despite those facts being shown to them.
If Aaron wasn't in the home when Joshua disappeared, that leaves only family members as the principal focus of the police investigation. Even more curiously, while Sabrina passed a polygraph exam, the police were able to share this piece of information.
So there have been two people that have failed a polygraph in this case. That would be the father and his grandfather. Both have failed two different polygraph examinations. The mother has passed a polygraph. And Joshua's friend, Aaron, did not submit to a polygraph examination.
I mentioned earlier that Joshua's grandfather, Jerome, called 911 to report Joshua missing. This call has never been released to the public, but the New Braunfels Police Department agreed to release it to us. Here's the entire call. The only editing that I've done to it was to remove the address.
20:35, 20 seconds, February 4, 2011.
New Braunfels 911, where's your emergency?
Go ahead, sir.
Yes. My grandson is missing. He's about 16, 18 months. And we can't find him anywhere.
Any obvious signs of injury or anything like that?
No.
Has he started, like, crawling or walking?
He's walking, but we can't find him anywhere.
What was he last seen wearing?
Dark brownish plaid shirt and blue jeans. And he didn't have any shoes on. Had socks on, that's it. Josh.
What is your name?
Josh. My name is Jerome Davis.
How long ago?
We've been looking for him for about 20 minutes.
Okay. I'm going to get somebody hitting that that direction, okay? Just keep looking for him. If you find him, give us a ring back.
Uh-huh.
Let me verify.
Wait.
26. Go ahead.
Right.
Okay, I'll get him rolling.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
The 911 call was placed at 8:35 p.m. on the evening of February 4th, 2011. The police stated that they believe that two events happened between the time Joshua disappeared and the time that Joshua's grandfather called 911. Those two events are a family meeting and the cleanup of drugs that were in the house that day. I can understand the cleanup, but why the family meeting?
Detectives have since learned that not only were there drugs inside the house, but that time was spent cleaning up and disposing of those drugs before the police were called to report Joshua missing. Because this is still an ongoing investigation, we can't really comment on the specifics of what evidence was and was not collected. What we can say is that a lot of evidence was collected and an abundance of information has been gathered in this case. A typical case handled by our Criminal Investigations Division generates about one large binder of paperwork. But as we demonstrated during a press conference during the fifth anniversary of Joshua's disappearance, numerous large binders, along with a variety of other resources, have been gathered and compiled in the search for Joshua. That evidence includes hundreds of hours of interviews, cell phone tower records, the results of numerous property searches and individuals related to this case, and the results of sonar searches of lakes, ponds, and rivers. And to be clear, as far as what exactly happened to baby Josh, investigators are not ruling out anything. However, to date, in all of the evidence that's been gathered, there has been no evidence that suggests that Joshua was abducted or abducted for the purposes of sex trafficking.
Finally, we asked what the New Braunfels Police Department is doing in their ongoing efforts to bring a resolution to Joshua's case.
To this day, we still receive tips and information, and all of those have been followed up on, whether they are here locally or potentially out of state. We have followed up on every lead that has been given to us. We have tried to rule out or rule in whether or not it's important or not to the investigation. And so, you know, if somebody believes they have information that could be helpful and they happen to not be one of these family members we're talking about, we want to hear from you as well. But we firmly believe that the truth is going to come out when someone that was inside that house comes forward with the information needed for us to be able to put an end to this case. We believe that this child's disappearance is suspicious in nature. We theorize that Joshua was possibly injured and then removed from the home. The hope is always to find him alive. It's unfortunate, though, that our investigation points towards a different theory indicating that he's most likely deceased. And we believe that the people that have the information that could help us bring closure to this case are those that were inside the house that night. And we firmly believe that at least one, but more than likely two or more people that were in the house that night have direct knowledge about what happened to Joshua. This case is more than likely going to remain unsolved unless someone listens to their conscience and decides that it's more important to tell the truth than it is to protect themselves or others. And we want them to come forward and help bring some closure to this case. They should call the New Braunfels Police Department. And the best phone number to call is 830-221-4100 and ask to talk to a detective.
Since Joshua's disappearance, Sabrina and Joshua's father have split and no longer speak. We did attempt to contact him, but didn't get a response. Sabrina says that just going near the home where he disappeared from is too much for her.
My son's father lives in that same house again. I couldn't even be in it. Like, just passing that house gives me goosebumps, and all I do is replay everything. It's like everything happens all over. Every time I'm even in that neighborhood, I don't see how anybody would still be able to live in that house. I am bitter a lot of times. I've had to learn how to deal and cope with feelings and emotions, and it's so hard.
Despite the friction between family and the police, Natalie has remained positive and hopeful that someday Joshua will be found alive.
The person that's responsible, whoever that person is, I don't know. That's what we're trying to find out. And it's kind of like they told me, no, you're never going to find him. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to listen to the negativity because this is my grandson and my family member. And I'm going to be hopeful until somebody proves to me otherwise. And I said, you know what? Miracles happen every day. So it's kind of like, I think maybe it was a crime of opportunity. If not, then maybe there was an accident and somebody knows something, but you know, where and who and how, I don't know, because if there was a car and they drove him, you know, they drove him off. If the theory is that he did get run over and they hurt him, there was no DNA on the pavement. They searched the car and the truck and everything else. And it's like, where's the DNA? You know, there's no reason for Joshua's DNA to be blood or stains or anything to be on the driveway.
So what happened to Joshua on that unusually cold night in February more than 8 years ago? Did someone plan to take him? Was he able to get out of the house and walk away, possibly getting lost and succumbing to the elements? Was he taken to Mexico, nearly 3 hours away? Do the adults that were in the house that day know what happened to Joshua? We know this is what the police believe to be the case, but the family believes that the police have tunnel vision and refuse to look at other possibilities. Was there some kind of accident and Joshua died at the house? How could 7 people keep a secret about a missing child for so many years? At the time of his disappearance, Joshua Davis Jr. was 18 months old. He was approximately 2 feet tall and weighed around 30 pounds. Joshua has black hair and brown eyes. He also has a dark brown birthmark on his left knee. If you have any information about Joshua's disappearance, you can call the New Braunfels Police Department at 830-221-4100. Crime Stoppers is offering a reward of up to $4,000 for information in this case that leads to an arrest or grand jury indictment. To remain anonymous and collect the reward, contact Crime Stoppers at 830-620-TIPS. That's 830-620-8477 or 1-800-640-8422. You can follow Joshua's case on social media at Let's Find Joshua Davis.
I believe that the grandfather or the dad know, and it's kind of like mixed, you know, but they don't have any evidence. And then I haven't been in the police station for a long time. I really want to go and I want to know what's going on, but it's like I dread going there because every time I go there, I leave so defeated. And so it's like they want me to give up, you know, the way that they talk. And it's like, oh, he's dead, you know, we believe that he's not alive and we're not going to find him alive and you're probably never going to see him again. And if you do, you know, you don't know what condition he's going to be in. And it's kind of like, who wants to hear that? Like, are you on the same side as I am or not? If this was your child, you wouldn't want that. You wouldn't stop looking. And it's kind of like, you know, the last time I went in there, I said something like, I really don't feel that he's gone. I just feel somebody has him or somebody knows where he's at. I don't know how he's being treated or whatever. Maybe, like I said, I don't know. Only God knows what happened and the person that's responsible.
The key difference between all of the other cases and the Baby Josh case is the level of cooperation that we've received from family members. In the Baby Josh case, members of the family, especially the parents, have repeatedly lied and misled detectives, sending them off to investigate many wild theories that they knew to be untrue, which took resources away from the investigation that could have been better used to help bring closure to this case. And furthermore, members of the family have been disingenuous with the media and with others about facts of the investigation. Even though the family has repeatedly been presented with the facts of the investigation by detectives, some members of the family have refused to believe those facts and have continued to propagate misinformation about the case to the media and to others. The New Braunfels Police Department believes that Baby Joshua's disappearance is suspicious in nature, and investigators theorize that Joshua was possibly injured and then removed from the home.
That brings us to the end of episode 175. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for the show. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by filling out a short survey at Wondery.com/survey. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from Wisconsin. Thanks for listening.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.